This is Mary Harrison, and this is the 13th of November, 1991. Gabby Dinman is taking notes, and we're at the home of Mike Levine at 7440 Lighthouse Point, which is in Wilkinsburg. We're sitting in a townhouse, drinking coffee and having coffee cake. It's just a very lovely townhouse apartment that we're living in. There are lots of flowers surrounding us and some works of art, and here we are. And so I'm going to start interviewing Mike Levine. The first thing that I would like to ask you, Mike, is about your immediate family. We're talking about your father, your mother, your siblings.
I'm married to Bernice Levine. Mm-hmm. We are the parents of three children. Jeffrey Ross, the oldest, is a geologist. Deborah Jo, the middle kid, is an international banker. And Mark is a project leader for a software company in Boston. Three grown children. Jeffrey's 36 or 37. You can tell already that I'm not good with dates and details. It's been a curse for me all my life. I can't remember details. Jeffrey's 36 or 37. Debbie is 35 or 36. And Mark is 33 or 34. Take your pick. But they're accomplished, talented, brilliant, and gorgeous children. Jeffrey is married to Sandy Romano. They live in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where Jeffrey is the leader of the Cole Research Program at the University of Alabama. They are the parents of two children, the lights of my life, Paul Evan, who is now seven, just had a birthday, and his little brother, Aaron Phillip, who is three going on 17. Lovely kids. That's the immediate family. My parents are deceased. Bernice's parents are deceased. She is one of three sisters. I have one brother, Dr. Philip Levine, an eminent internist here in Pittsburgh. That's the immediate family.
How about your mother and father, their names?
My mother was a civets, and in Pittsburgh that means something. She was in the civets clan. The group that boasts Rabbi Sivitz, the Talmudic scholar, is the leader of the clan. Her name is Florence, and she was one of eight children. My father, Albert Levine, was the son of Philip Levine, who was a merchant and had a clothing store in Pittsburgh for very many years, going all the way back to almost the period after the Civil War. Years. Oh, well, maybe not after the Civil War, but certainly the early 1900s. My father was the leader of our family through the Depression era. We had hard times. We were very poor, but he worked very hard and he was able to bring in money, and we survived that traumatic period. My mother had maintained a home that was filled with Jewish aura. It was not a kosher home. We had been a kosher family until I was about somewhere 2 or 3 years old, when at a family gathering at my maternal grandparents' home, on one of the holidays, the whole family was stricken with what we now call ptomaine or food poisoning. The whole group of us were so desperately stricken that we were taken by ambulance to the hospital. I dramatized the affair because at the hospital, they all had their stomachs emptied and they went home, but I was an infant then, and I was kept in the hospital. And my parents later told me that they were terror-stricken, that I was going to die. I was gravely ill. But along the way, the doctor who took care of me when I recovered eventually told told my mother to give me plenty of bacon, because bacon was good for wounded stomachs. That ended kosher in our home. But we were living then in the South Hills, and bacon was easily come by. Kosher food was not easily come by then, so kosher went out the window. But we had a home that was filled with Jewish ritual, customs, traditions, foods, all that stuff. So we've tried to carry over that, although I don't know if you're interested in the Jewish aspect of my life.
Oh, very much so.
Oh, okay, well.
Very much so. We're interested in your life.
My life, okay.
What I'm interested at the moment is just for, do you remember the name of the doctor that treated you, that recommended the bacon?
No, I don't.
Okay.
My mother would. My mother was the family historian.
Okay. Was your mother born in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So both of your parents
both
were
my
born.
My parents were born here.
And your grandparents? I assume your father's parents were born here, but your mother's?
I had a grandfather on my father's side who was an interesting guy. I don't remember him other than just a misty, faint memory. But we've had pictures of him in the house. And he was a Zionist. And he was also an accomplished merchant. And he left as a legacy to me a sheaf, whatever happened to them, I don't know, a sheaf of Zionist bonds. Oh, a thick stack of bonds and notes that he had given to the Zionist cause. And had the Zionist movement succeeded prior to the creation of the State of Israel, I guess I would be a rich guy. And you would have trouble talking to me because I would be very aloof and aristocratic. But the Zionist movement in the early days was poverty-stricken, and my grandfather helped to finance it a lot. And the family fortune went into the Zionist cause. Let's think that it's a noble belief, even if it is true, or not true, but I think it was. So anyhow, that's the influence of Judaism in my life. What else can I tell you?
Were you born in Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
Where were you born?
At McGee Hospital, McGee Women's Hospital.
And how about giving us the date?
It was Black Friday, November 6, 1923. And McGee Hospital.
Okay, so you're 68 years old.
My name is Myron Elliott Levine.
Okay.
But I use Mike Levine as a professional name.
And your brother, the physician, is he older than you? Or?
He's young, 6 years younger than me.
And
he's the family white sheep.
And where was he born?
Here in Pittsburgh, also in McGee Hospital.
And do you know the name of the physician that delivered you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
I'd have to ask my mother, and she's not here.
Okay. When did your parents die?
My father died a few years ago. I would think that it's now about 4 or 5. My mother died 8 or 9 years ago. And I would have studied up, and I would have all of these dates and time periods firmly fixed in my mind if I knew that this was... if they were important.
We're coming back, so there's no problem.
I'll have to do some research.
Do some research, and then we can just do a tape based on your own questions instead of ours. So that's no problem at all, Mike.
Okay.
Do you remember anything significant about any of the rabbis? What congregation did you belong to?
My parents lived in Beachview at the time, and...
Is that where you grew up?
No, I grew up in Dormont.
Okay.
But I lived in Beachview and Temple, Bethel. It's Bethel Synagogue. Laid their cornerstone the day I was born.
Where?
In Beachview, on Broadway Avenue. And subsequently we became, as we later lived in the South Hills, we became members of that congregation. But it was created at the very time I was born, I'm told. It's now gone. It's the congregation moved to Mount Lebanon. The synagogue became a Catholic church or a library, I believe, something out there. It's on Broadway Avenue, across the street from St. Catherine's or St. Anne's or one of those saints.
And then did they become more affiliated with Temple Emmanuel then, which then later opened, or did they break away from
that? No, Bethel was first.
Temple, no, I understand that, but then when Bethel closed, did you then go to Emmanuel, or?
No.
That was to be formed, or?
Well, it was a conservative congregation. Let me get the chronology here. I went to Cheder at Bethel. Went to Sunday school at Bethel.
Were you bar mitzvah?
Yeah, at Bethel.
Do you remember the rabbi?
I think his name was Weiss. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask my mother when I see her. I hated it.
Why?
Well, it was hard. It was tough. The rabbi was very mean and hit you if you didn't know your lessons, if you didn't read right or write properly, if you didn't do your homework. In addition to going to cheder after school, and I hated it because all my friends, all my classmates at school played, I had to go to cheder, and cheder was, I lived in Dormont, and cheder was in Beachview, and it was a good 30, 45-minute walk to get to cheder. So I have very unpleasant memories of cheder.
How many children in how many children were Jewish in your school in Dormont?
Well, I was alone for a time, I believe. I recall that I was the only one for a while. Later on, there was a kid who lived across the street from me named Buddy Friedman, and my closest and dearest friend, Chuck Cohen, Charles Cohen, came to live near us, and he was in Kelton School in Dormont with me. And for a time, the two of us went to cheder. One of the highlights, one of the bright spots of my life was when my dad got me a bike with big red balloon tires, and it was a beautiful bike. And Chuck used to hang on the back on roller skates, and we would fly. We would fly, the two of us. I on the bike, and he hanging on behind on his roller skates, and we tried to go as fast as we could. And we went through driveways, and we would have to go from Illinois Avenue, where we lived, to West Liberty, to Potomac Avenue, to Broadway, all the way up through the borough of Dormont and all the way into Beachview to go to cheder, to be hit by the rabbi, and to spend an hour or maybe 2 hours at cheder and then go home. And by the time we got home, it would be dark, and it made it for a very long, arduous day for a little kid. I had homework from school, and I had homework from cheder, and I missed out playing with the kids in the block. We had a big gang of kids in our neighborhood, and they played marvelous games. And Charlie and I missed out on it together. It was a bonding association with us. He was closer to me than my brother, I think. He died on me a little over a year ago. It was one of the meanest things. He did a lot of mean things to me over the years. And his leaving me like that was a rotten thing for him to do.
What did Charles
do? I'll hate him for it forever.
What did Charles do?
He grew up to become a salesman, like his father was the buyer in the Frank and Cedar's department store. Charlie became a paper salesman. He was a partner in a firm called Whitaker Paper. They sold wholesale paper supplies to big business firms and to corporations that used the paper that you use for copy machines and typing and all that stuff. And we never worked together, but we played together, we vacationed together, we've been lifelong friends. As a matter of fact, his parents and my parents were childhood friends. And there was a third kid that we played with. He didn't live in Dormont with us, he lived in Beachview. But his parents also were childhood friends of our parents in the Hill District when our parents were school kids. His name is Ted Richman. He's in Florida now. And Ted is Chuck's cousin. And he, too, is younger than me. but he was close. And it's been kind of an intergenerational thing that our parents were pals, and we became chums.
Did you have any anti-Semitic problems at all at school and dorm?
Of course.
Any special things you want? When you say "of course," was it something that was as strong as your feelings about your hater, or was it just something that you got used to? Or
no, I had kids that picked on me. There was a particular neighbor, a kid lived a few blocks away, beat me up once in a while, and the reason being that that I was Jewish and he was not, but I think the real reason was that he was bigger and tougher than me. He was a schoolmate, a classmate, and in my class in high school. We had our 50th high school class reunion recently. I wanted to go to find out from him where he had done time, because I was sure that he was going to do hard time on the rock pile. It turns out, to my surprise, he became a successful and well-liked insurance salesman. A successful and very personable guy, I'm told. I didn't have much association with him in our adult years, but he played a dirty trick on me. During the planning of the reunion, he died. And I never got to tell him how much I hate him. But he's one of a number of people who, to my bewilderment, when I was a little kid, I couldn't understand it. And it got to be very troubling for me that I was Jewish.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit, Mike? What troubled you?
Did I tell you about the Jewish kid that lived across the street from me, Buddy Friedman?
You mentioned it.
Yeah, Buddy's father owned a grocery, and Buddy was a neat kid. I don't know where he is today, but one time I remember a teacher in school screaming and yelling at him, grabbing him by the hair, and lifting him off the ground. I know that that's physiologically impossible, but she was screaming him, calling him vile names, Jewish derogatory terms, and beating up on him something. He was kind of a wild kid, but she hit him, beat him, shrieked at him, and in addition to beating him, she grabbed his hair and lifted him off the ground. He was a little guy, and he was kicking and screaming and crying. She hurt him terribly. And that made a lasting impression on me. It really did.
Were there anti-Semitic things that she said about to him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Kike is one of the kindest words that she used. And I didn't understand it. I didn't really know. Mostly, we were accepted. We were just kids. And all my friends, most of my friends, were Gentile. And I got along wonderfully with them. We had a nice neighborhood. And we got along well with the neighbors. But there were incidents, that little blow-ups that came, and I was picked on and vilified because I was Jewish. My parents did what they could to comfort me, but there it was nevertheless. And then this sense of differentiation, this alienation from the mainstream of the kids in suburban Dormont, was emphasized by the fact that after school, I had to go to to Bethel to study at Rubenstein. Mr. Rubenstein was the teacher there. And he succeeded the rabbi and was the teacher. And he was not nearly as violent as the rabbi, just a little violent. But that rabbi was a terrible, terrible man. So the holidays there in the conservative style got to be tiresome and really tedious for kids. But we were made to attend and sit up, and it was a... I could never understand how my parents could enjoy it. But they did. Of course, when we got home, the holidays were always fabulous in the house. Not that sure.
And then you later went into a much more reformed, being a member of Temple Sinai.
Oh, yeah. After I married, I moved with Bernice to, our first home was in Pleasant Hills. We rented an apartment in Pleasant Hills near Bill Green at the Cloverleaf. Happened to drive past the apartment yesterday, and it looked kind of neat. We were poor and we didn't know it. It was an apartment, the rent was subsidized because the builder had gotten government money, government funding to help finance the thing after the war, the Great War, WW2. And we were well able to afford the rent, but that put us in the same financial and economic and social bracket as all the other tenants in that village. Cloverleaf Village was the name of the place. And people were in the same income bracket as us, young families with little kids. And because I felt an obligation to be a member of a Jewish congregation, I wanted to, I liked the idea of praying in a language that was meaningful and understandable to me. Chanting Hebrew prayers was not my way of communicating with God. I just didn't. But there was an appeal to the Reform liturgy. The ritual in the Reform temple was meaningful, and it was supportive. It was really a rewarding experience going to services there. And unlike my previous religious experience, it had meaning and form to it, significance, and it was everything that a religion should be, supportive.
And who was the rabbi? Was Rabbi Elson the rabbi when you joined?
No. Incidentally, my parents were... Oh, it wasn't the new thing for Bernice and I to join the temple. Actually, Temple Emmanuel was formed when my brother and I were still living at home. My parents became members when it was first created. They were charter members, so to speak, of Temple Emmanuel. And at the urging of my brother and I, we went to the first services that were held. That was in a Methodist church, I think, in Dormont.
Do you know when? The year?
No.
This is the Temple Emmanuel.
I'll ask my mother when I see her. Temple Emmanuel's first services were held in a Methodist church. It was kind of a nice church, but it didn't have crosses and religious artifacts of the Christian sort. And it was on the corner of Washington Road and Scott Road. And we had our high holiday services there.
Do you remember the name of the rabbi?
I'll ask my mother when I see her.
Okay. You're going to ask your mother what year it was, too, right? Mike, before we...
Is it important that you know the year that Temple Emmanuel was formed?
No, it's nice. We find it out.
Exactly.
Call Temple Emmanuel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. No. It's just an interesting thing that, you know...
Yeah, we had services in Mount Lebanon High School, I think. Or it seems to me that we were in the auditorium at the high school. Had you heard that?
I know nothing about temple.
Well, there was a temple without a building, and they were acquiring a piece of land on Bower Hill Road, which later became, first they built the basement, and then the upper floors, and it's a growing establishment now. But in those days, it was just kind of a group of wandering Jews.
All right, what I'd like to do now, since we're still with your immediate family, I'd love to get some general ideas, since I don't want to push you on dates. I'd love to know how old your father was when he died. I'd love to know how old your mother was.
My dad was in his 80s. My mother was almost 80.
Okay. All right. Could you tell me a little bit about your schooling? And where did you were born?
My parents lived in Beachview,
okay.
I believe, when I was born.
All right.
Later, my first childhood recollection, my first childhood memory is as a little boy on a tricycle, a velocipede, riding on the porch of a house that we had that is on, it was on Wilmot Street. Wilmot Street is now better known as the Boulevard of the Allies. In the Oakland section of Pittsburgh, it was about a block away from Bates Street.
Okay.
I remember living there. My grandparents, maternal grandparents, lived a few blocks away, and I remember going to visit my grandmother, who could tell the most wonderful stories, bake the most wonderful things to eat. And I had an uncle who was about 2 years, a year and a half or 2 years older than me. And when I would go to visit him to stay over, my grandmother, you want Jewish recollections?
Everything.
My grandmother told me about something called the Dibbuk. Mm. Does that mean anything to you?
It sure does.
I remember under a feather comforter with my uncle, who was, he was not really an uncle, he was a playmate.
Sure.
And he on one side and me on the other, and my grandmother with us in this huge bed under this huge feather comforter. And she used to tell us stories that were terrorizing. I mean, they were absolutely paralyzing. They were so frightening. And, of course, I think she did that just so we could snuggle up with her and be comforted. And but ghost stories in bed. Terrible stories about the Dibbuk. But she was a wonderful lady. She lived a couple of blocks away from where I lived in the Oakland section of Pittsburgh. I can remember riding a bicycle on that porch. But what I remember about the city then was from time to time, it would get dark. I remember pitch black in the middle of the day. And it was frightening to me as a little kid. And my mother explained that it was from the smoke. The location then was just up the hill from what was the nation's one of the busiest steel mills.
Sure, Second Avenue.
And it was filthy.
The name of the steel mill?
I don't know, just the steel mill.
Yeah, right, and on Second Avenue.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I now know, became, it was the Jones and Laughlin
Works.
Sure,
sure.
And there's still a vestige of it remaining there, but in those days, the sky was lit up at night. And the sky was pitch black during the day. That's what it was like to live in Pittsburgh. I remember my mother had lace curtains on the windows, and she would have to wash them frequently. Lace curtains were the thing then. And it was tough, sweeping up, sweeping, constant battle against the dirt. And I don't think we ever lived elsewhere to get away from that industrial pollution. But when I was just a little infant, my parents did live in Wheeling for a while.
West Virginia.
Yeah, Wheeling, West Virginia. And I don't remember that at all. But when we did come back in my early childhood to Oakland, I remember that neighborhood. A block away on Bates Street, a child had been kidnapped. And I was forbidden to ever go near that neighborhood because that's where the kidnap occurred. And my mother told me that she didn't want me to be kidnapped. Another little terrorizing thing for a little kid that I remember that.
Okay, so how long did you live on Bates Street?
I don't know.
And then where was your schooling then? You started out first grade in... Dormont?
I think somewhere along the line, we moved out to Dormont, to okay. Illinois Avenue.
All right. And so your schooling, your grade school, do you remember the name of your grade school?
Sure. Kelton School.
And you went there from first to through eighth?
Yep.
And then where did you go to high school?
Dormont High School.
Okay. And did you have any further education? Did you go to college then?
Yes, I went through Pitt and got my bachelor's degree. I went to Pitt before and after World War II. I had military service in the Air Force.
And what was your, was it just, you had a bachelor's degree?
Yes.
And then when you graduated from college, what did you go to the war?
Yeah.
And when did you go to war?
Won the war. Don't you remember? I did. Me.
You alone. When did you go into the Army? When did you go to the Army?
Pearl Harbor Day, 1942.
It's the same day, December 7th.
Yeah, I enlisted.
And then where did you go?
I enlisted, and I went to Europe, and it was awful. It was just awful. I'm surprised these days that there are veterans that want memorials built to their having served in the military. I've tried desperately to forget as much as I could. It was just terrible.
Do you have any...
3.5 years out of my life that...
Any stories? Or do you want to just... I mean, I don't want to delve, but do you have any things to... Any reasons to give?
I hated the structured life. I hated the discipline. I hated the food was terrible. The clothing was ugly and uncomfortable, and the leadership was. I met some very very bad commanders, and I hated regimentation, sleeping in the large group, and then when it came to combat, I've never been fond of sleeping on the ground, and I think I learned to like coffee, and that may have saved my life. Drinking coffee and eating peanut butter sandwiches were the way I got through WW2.
And did you feel any patriotism? I mean, were you caught up at all?